Welcome to Week to Week, the political roundtable from the Commonwealth Club of California from Monday, October 17th, 2016. Now, if you thought America had only gone crazy in its politics, this week we saw the case of would-be hero Michael Orchard, who smashed a glass door on a home and rescued a family dog from a fire. The only problem was that there was no fire and the dog was safe and he was high on drugs. And just imagine the fire. So it makes politics seem a little more normal now, doesn't it? So thanks for being here with us today in San Francisco. I'm John Zipperer, your host for Week to Week, and of course the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial. On today's program, I can't imagine what we're going to talk about, but just to throw out a few ideas, I'm thinking the presidential campaign, some state and local issues, candidates and propositions, the entire Trump movement. What does it do in the future? And, of course, other political news and not to mention our news quiz at the very end. As always, I like to note that the Commonwealth Club is home to a wide variety of views. So any opinions that are expressed up here are those solely of the speakers and not of the Commonwealth Club. So let's meet our panelists for today. I'm going to start on the... Sorry?
We're disavowed already.
On the far end of the stage is Carla Marinucci. She's a senior writer at the Politico California Playbook. She's on Twitter at C. Marinucci. Next to her is Scott Schaefer. He's senior editor for California Politics and Government at KQED. He's on Twitter at Scott Schaefer. He also has a tote bag, so you can give him your radio pledge dollars tonight. And next to him is Joe Garofoli, a senior political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And he's, of course, on Twitter at Joe Garofoli. There are question cards spread throughout the room. Use those to write out questions, and we'll collect them, and I will try to ask as many as I can. Let's go on to our roundtable. Now, let's take a quick audience poll. How many of you have already voted? Raise
your
hand.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
I did, too.
Wow.
Already filled it out and mailed it in. Okay. So you folks have already done your job. You can just sit back and relax. You're not responsible for anything else that goes on here in the next hour. So your fault. Let's talk, of course, about the presidential race. It's gotten even more interesting than it has been. I'm just going to start with perhaps the most colorful bit. Today, Larry Flint offered to pay $1 million for any video or audio recordings of Donald Trump engaged in this behavior that he and his wife says he doesn't do. So, Joe, I believe the number of women who are publicly accusing Donald Trump is like 9 right now.
Yeah, do we? I don't know if we need any more proof. And Mr. Flint does this all the time, though.
Yeah,
he always offers $1 million. It's kind of a regular thing. He did it with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He did it with all sorts of folks. So, I mean, I'm surprised he's waited this long to weigh in, frankly. So
it's kind of hard to get a word in edgewise with Donald Trump.
Yes, it is.
Well, I mean, is this kind of what we're going to be looking at, though, for the next, 3 weeks? You know, drip, 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 you know, more revelations and more counterattacks.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I talked to Gloria Allred this week, right before all the...
She's doing a lot of the dripping.
Yeah, she is. I mean, you know, I talked to her actually before the first woman came out and said, look, Gloria, you were behind a lot of the Bill Cosby... women, what do you think is going to happen? And she said, you know, that it takes a lot for the first woman to come forward. Once that happens, the dam is going to break. That's exactly what happened. She had that press conference. And now these women are all over the place. I think Trump, at this point, I mean, look, going into this debate, this is going to be, are they all going to be sitting there in the audience? I don't know. I mean,
what? I need a bigger room. This one.
Well, the other dripping, too, is the emails, right? The WikiLeaks.
Yes.
I mean, there's another 50,000 pages of John Podesta's emails and others, which in some ways the most interesting thing is how boring they've been, really. I mean, you know, they're really, if somebody was going to release all my email, I might be a little worried.
I think that's the problem for Trump when you come to the really sexy nature of the accusations against him, and then you have that on the other side. I don't know how he can compete with that, but the fact is, I think more shocking than anything has been his reaction to the women.
Right.
That may have hurt him more than anything. This disparaging attitude, like, she's not hot enough for me to have,
I sort of felt from the beginning, I mean, I wondered if he really wanted to win. you know, including the nomination. Like, I think he got in it for other reasons, like burnishing his brand or something. And when he does things like that, it just, to me, it reinforces this notion that he doesn't really want to win, because he's doing all these things time and again that you wouldn't do if you wanted to win.
Right. And he could have sort of derailed some of this by starting out the second debate by coming out with a genuine, heartfelt apology after the Billy Bush Access Hollywood, not what he did, which is sort of say, no, this is locker room talk. That's probably the worst answer to give, in addition to what he said. And then all the people came out, and it's, but I'm wondering, is there a law of diminishing returns at some level? I mean, how much more do people need to hear? I mean, I think it's important for all these women to come out and have their story heard, but in terms of the political thing, where do you guys think it's?
Yeah, like, it's kind of baked into it at this point.
I don't know. I think people are willing to listen to this as long as it goes on. And you have the Trump campaign itself creating headlines. Melania Trump today. Oh, this is just boys talk.
He was egged on.
He was trapped. They're blaming Bush. Billy Bush,
come on.
He got fired today too.
He got fired today.
She's referring to this. She gave an interview to Fox today,
and said that this doesn't sound like the husband that she knows. She's never heard him talk like this. This was boy talk, and she said that the interviewer egged him on. That just keeps that story going another day. Her absence from the campaign has been really noticeable. And I think right there, it has been fodder for everyone.
Do you think that starts with this, all these revelations, or really with the convention where she got into, the plagiarism stuff?
I think particularly with these revelations, you're looking for the woman who knows him best to come forward and say, look, this is not the husband I know, or some kind of... Yeah. Her original entry into this whole story was going after the People writer and saying, hey, I never met you, asking for a retraction on that aspect of the story, not on any other.
And even Ivanka, too.
Ivanka has, that's to me, is a huge, she's missing
statement
from the campaign.
It's a
statement. This is his daughter who has been out front with him talking about women's rights. She's nowhere on this issue. And you even look at her Twitter feed. She's selling shoes and other stuff, but she's not talking about this.
That said, apparently it was her husband, Trump's brother-in-law, who's essentially the campaign director, whose idea it was to bring these four accusers of Bill Clinton and try to get them into the family box.
Now, is this Kushner?
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us about him. We're going to be hearing more about him, I think.
Well, yes, because the story came out today that he is perhaps putting together some kind of Trump media, Trump TV, enterprise that is, and that's the question that I think we're all looking at now. What is Trump banking on something after the election? And I think that's the real question here. No matter what happens in this election, does Donald Trump become the guy, does he become the go-to guy for the cable TV channels? Every time Hillary Clinton does something, he's such good ratings for them, he's such good quotes, that even after the election, is he going to be the guy that they continue to go to?
I'm dubious about his power as a media force after the election. Without the immediacy of the election, where you want to hear from him, there's a live game going on. If it's just him peeling off and doing like a Glenn Beck as his own channel that you have to pay for, I mean, you don't want to pay to hear Trump. It's cool to hear him when he's free on MSNBC.
But then he can just declare bankruptcy and not pay taxes for another decade.
I would agree with you, except I think this guy, in terms of marketing and media, has shown that he has just such an unusual instinct. And, we've seen this. I was talking to John ahead of time. We've seen this before with one other family who came out of nowhere, had nothing to offer, talked to just average people, the Kardashians. And that, I'm sorry, there's a parallel there in terms of how do you become something and just so dominate social media with no real message or anything. I mean, he's really shown how you can market the whole enterprise of running for the presidency of the United States.
But then he becomes something else. If it's going to be Trump the reality show, that's one thing, which would be entertaining on its own. But I think Trump as a political force, I don't want to say loyal opposition, but the opposition, I don't know if he's built up the credibility politically during the campaign to be that person. I don't doubt that he'll be a compelling watch, but I don't know about a political.
Yeah, if I could just for a moment shift it away from Trump. And I was thinking today it would be so interesting if Bernie Sanders had gotten the nomination. Because, like, what a choice that would be for the country.
Yeah.
You know, as flawed as Trump is. And I kind of felt like in the primaries, Bernie Sanders got a bit of a free ride. Because Hillary wasn't going to attack him because she didn't want to alienate his supporters. And the Republicans would have loved to run against him, you know? Mm-hmm. So we'll never know.
Joe Biden, for it. I mean, if Joe,
or, yeah, Joe Biden. Biden. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's, but, you know, it would have been such a polarized choice to have Sanders. I think in that case, you might have seen like a Bloomberg jump.
But in. I do think, I mean, I think that's the interesting question to ponder now as we go forward is Trump's whole impact on the political stage as it is. I mean, we've seen somebody really take this and turn it into something completely different. And now I am not kidding when I say you will see other people get into this race, the presidential race, for the purposes of making their brand. And Kanye West, I hate to say it, he's already said he's going to run.
He was high when he said that, though. He was high when he said it.
I don't think he's kidding. We've seen this example, as disturbing as the whole idea of turning it into a money-making enterprise.
But has it really been a money-making enterprise?
I
don't know. I mean, I have a friend who works at Macy's, and they, to this day, get about, 40 credit cards a day that they're sent to them, ripped up from people. Has it really helped his brand? You know, I don't know. There was a piece on Marketplace today about Brazil. There's a casino and a hotel, a Trump casino in Brazil, and people are still flocking there.
I think that's the other aspect of this election that's going to be really interesting, is the whole sort of reason for Donald Trump has been the brand, the building that brand and marketing it. What happens to this brand after the election? If he comes away, as we think he might with these polls, with the big L on his forehead, first of all, this is what Gloria Allred said, what women's group is going to want to book any kind of convention at a Trump hotel? Half of the country is not going to want to stay at a Trump hotel. As you mentioned, foreign governments, are they going to want to book?
Latinos.
Latinos. Like, well, we can just go down the list. And what happens to the brand afterwards? That's what he spent his whole life building. And you have to kind of wonder where that goes.
I want to circle back to the women issue, and that is, let's start with Scott. I mean, is it fair game to bring up Bill Clinton and his past?
Well,
if you agree the way that he did it,
yeah.
But is it fair to say, well,
is it fair? Sure. I mean, everything is fair in politics in a sense. I mean, has it worked for him? No. Has it helped him? No. I mean, were his consultants telling him to do it, and his family, who apparently are his closest advisors, telling him to do it? I don't know. Maybe Jared Kushner was. But, you know, I mean, I do think there is a legitimate double standard that Democrats have around this issue. I think there were a lot of people, including many women, who were willing to kind of give Bill Clinton a pass in the late 90s. And I don't know if you're hissing me or Bill or the women. Bring it on.
You're playing the role of Deb Saunders tonight.
But no, I do. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, each of those women's stories is a little different and the evidence is a little different and there's some inconsistencies in their stories. And he's not running for president ultimately. And that whole thing was litigated, with the impeachment, and he was found not guilty by the Senate and so on and so forth. But I do, I can understand why Trump would bring it up. I do think that conversation around Bill Clinton and women was not necessarily completed when they left the White House. Whether people want to hear it now is another matter altogether.
I agree that it's necessary to really examine any kind of accusations like these and to listen to the women involved. But particularly, I mean, I think that where Trump has gone sort of over the line is, you get people showing up now with Bill Clinton is a rapist T-shirts because they're being paid by these rallies, by InfoWars, the alt-right group, to show up and get on camera. They get paid $5,000 to shout this. In the case of Juanita Broderick, Ken Starr investigated her allegations. He found nothing.
Ken Starr.
She gave a signed deposition and testified under oath twice that she wasn't raped by Bill Clinton, but yet she's out there making that accusation. And that accusation, they're basically calling him a rapist because of those comments.
Well, and there's a huge element of, I mean, the T-shirts we saw in Cleveland, you know, it just, starting with put her in jail or pictures of her behind bars, I mean, that was the least of it, you know, the things that...
Horrible.
It's horrible.
Horrible, misogynistic.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this sort of brings up what probably maybe we're all feeling in this, is no matter where you stand on these two candidates, I don't know, you've got to have a feeling of sadness about this election. I'm just really sad watching what's happening here on stage, watching this disintegration of this process, the disintegration of discourse, civility, and everything else. I feel like this election has just been sort of a watershed moment, and not in a good way. Will we ever be able to get back to...
The high levels of discourse we had in previous presidential elections.
You're right.
It wasn't that long ago, though.
Swift voting. Let's get back to swift voting.
but it wasn't that long ago that we had Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in primary debates talking
about issues.
Yeah, issues. Yeah. And again, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I think Republicans would have loved to have those kinds of discussions on the Republican side, instead of being kind of the Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. But I mean, Carla raises a really good point. I mean, because you do become sort of inured to this level of conversation, and hopefully it is an aberration. You know, I don't think that there's going to be somebody in 2020 who's going to say, "Gee, I'm going to do what Trump did." I mean, there's no evidence that it's really going to work very well. Ultimately,
it's also hard to replicate what he had.
Yeah.
100% name recognition. Unlimited bank account. A guy who made his living saying whatever he wanted to say. So I don't know if we're going to have so much as the issue is going to be another Trump, but the issue is that the bar is so much lower now.
Mm-hmm.
Call me a cynic, but I have a hard time believing that people are going to raise the bar. And I think that's what we have to fight. Like after the second debate, I don't know, you guys, I was like, the only thing I could think of was writing is when I read my story was, this is a sad night for America. Really was. People feel bummed out after watching that second debate, no matter what you thought. Like, even if you're a Democrat and you think, well, at least Hillary had a good night and he kind of imploded and this is terrible. But it was just made me want to throw up.
There's the question, what do you think we have going into the third night? The third debate?
What happens now?
Let's talk about it. What do you expect?
Well, I think... I mean, he has nothing to lose now to just throw bombs. I don't know. You know, her strategy is going to be, again, you know, we go high. Try to just.
Oh, that's the prop measure.
Yeah,
Prop 64. We'll get to that.
That's Prop 64. Very nice.
But I think that's going to be hard to do because I think he is going to just swing for the fences, and
it's going to be interesting. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I say, because, you know, Chris Wallace is the moderator for this one, Fox News. And in some ways, you know, if you look back at all those debates, I mean, the Fox News debate, I thought, was one of the best.
I thought they were, too.
I mean, their questions were
Megyn
tough.
Kelly
I mean,
Megyn
Kelly,
job.
Yeah,
yes,
Megyn Kelly
great.
Did it. They all great. Did, you know, yeah. And I think partly because they felt maybe that they were going to be judged harshly if they gave him a pass on all these things. But I hope it's that kind of a debate again, you know, and we'll see. And the topics are fairly...
What are the...
They're like the Supreme Court, fitness to serve, being commander-in-chief, debt and entitlement. So they're kind of like
foreign policy.
I mean, they're kind of immigration. So they're kind of like... They don't lend themselves as well to some of the craziness that we saw on the last one, but we'll see.
Trump's strategy, to jump up with what Carla was saying, I was talking to somebody about this today for a debate preview, and it's going to be, he described it as demobilization. So basically, Trump's going to just scorch the rest of the building, and just in the hope of depressing
turnout
for Hillary, particularly among young people who are maybe voting the first time. And it's just, I mean, can you imagine this is your first election? And this is the way it is? Yeah. And it's
I think it's having the opposite effect, though. I think you've seen, like, big spikes in registration around both conventions and around the first debate. Like, and it's very much favored Democrats.
Florida has seen a surge.
Florida, early voting as well.
Here in California, too. I mean, we talked to Tom Steyer this week, the billionaire activist who told us his efforts have registered 500,000 new voters in California. 500,000 in California. And it's record registration here. Latinos are off the charts. It's going to be very interesting to watch. And you saw the hands with early voting. And this is where, you know, there's a lot of Democrats out there who are still very nervous. you know, the polls are showing she's still within the margin of error and so forth. Could this be a Brexit, some kind of crazy? I think that when you talk to people like Donnie Fowler, who's running the Get Out the Vote campaign for Hillary Clinton in all the battleground states, this is the real difference between the Clinton campaign and the Trump campaign and what's probably going to happen on election night. The candidate is important, absolutely, but there are a lot of other pieces to a presidential campaign, and it's all about that last 48 hours. In most states, here in California, a lot of us vote ahead of time. But getting those people to the polls, calling them up, and here in this state and in all these battleground states, this is where Hillary Clinton's campaign has the whole Obama machine together, and they have just replicated exactly what he did, which was a landmark, achievement. So that
and is. And there's nothing like that comparably on the other side.
Yeah,
zero.
I think the challenge, though, is unlike Obama, who had a lot of natural enthusiasm around her, you're not really hearing that so much around Hillary. And I was talking to a friend of mine with the AFL-CIO, and he said it's really hard to get people to volunteer for her. They're going to vote for her, you know, they're for her, but to spend a Saturday or a Sunday making phone calls, walking precincts, he said it's really, really tough. Doesn't mean it won't, that, you know, that there's not enough people saying yes, but.
I know you have some people. A bunch of people going from California now to Nevada, which is starting to vote early this weekend. Mm-hmm. I was talking to the Hillary people today. They said they've got a bunch of people from Hollywood, you know, Jennifer Garner, a bunch of people coming out there. So they're getting it together. And you're right. The Trump campaign has like two surrogates, Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie.
There's Newt. Newt Gingrich. Don't forget Newt.
But that's the problem. You've got to get, they've got people driving people to the polls. They've got that whole thing going on. And the early voting is huge. In California, what is it, 60% of us now are voting early. Yeah. And a lot of these voters, I mean, the Clinton campaign knows how to contact them ahead of time. A lot of you probably have been contacted already. Multiple times.
Yeah, people think the Commonwealth Club emails people too much. I've gotten three emails from Hillary Clinton within an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times.
Did she say she would buy you dinner? She said she would buy me dinner.
She said she would climb into the next debate. Okay, question from the audience. Are you worried that the pre-election claims of a, quote, rigged election will damage Hillary Clinton in the office? Well, she'll have to deal with the fallout of that.
You talk to almost any elected official. None of us have heard this kind of rhetoric before to this level. I think it is a danger. Yes, I think it is a danger. When you're hearing, I was just listening to the Trump rally before we started here in Green Bay. You know, they're talking about a torch and pitchforks election there. You know, I mean, people are talking about revolution, coups. They're talking to CNN and saying, I think she needs to be assassinated. I mean, that's like a felony. Hello. I mean, to even talk about it. But they're out there discussing it. Some of these people who will say this kind of stuff are nutcases. But the fact is,
to a certain extent, it'll depend on what Trump does on election night. You know, if he signals like, hey, it's over, or if he signals, you know, get the pitchforks. You know, I think that'll make a big difference. That Frank Bruni from the New York Times had a column about what previous losers have said on election night or in Al Gore's case in December when the Supreme Court finally decided to stop the counting in Florida. And it was quite striking, actually, to read what all of them said. You know, it was extremely patriotic. And, of course, in some cases, that it ended the next day in terms of the goodwill gestures, but like McCain. But nonetheless, you know, I think there was that higher calling that they all had.
But I'm wondering with the rhetoric you're getting from Trump.
Yeah, it's a total different game plan.
Every day, he's not letting go of this. Where Mike Pence actually said, "No, we're going to accept."
Right.
And Trump tweeted the next day, "No, the polls are rigged." So he's separated from his own candidate.
I think that may be the point where all these, the Paul Ryans, the McConnells, you know, the party elders, you know, they all say enough. You know, they're not going to say that all right now because they want to. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of alienating voters. You know.
Okay.
And that's something we take for granted, that the peaceful transfer of power. That's what makes our country different than many others. And. Now it's being questioned. We've never heard that before. And that's what's so dangerous and sets everybody on edge is that could be compromised.
Yeah.
And that's what's scary.
Well, and it's also so preposterous. I mean, the way we run elections in this country, it's by county by county. And you'd have to have like a wave of Republican secretaries of state colluding with, you know, it's just so
Republicans
improbable.
Control 30 states.
Yeah.
I mean, they control the voting in 30 states. So if there's a rigged election, I mean, they're in on it.
Well, and also it's ironic. I mean, Trump, who benefited so much from the media really being rigged on his behalf in the primary,
You
know, now he's like unloading on the media.
Yeah,
as
I mean, I think, too, we forget how contentious these elections are because I was on election night in 2008 with Obama in Grant Park in Chicago, and I think what you didn't see, or maybe you didn't see on the air, was he was surrounded. The entire stage was surrounded by about 3-inch thick bulletproof glass all the way around, and that I think if Hillary Clinton is elected, I bet you'll see the same thing.
I hope so.
Okay. Well, moving away from Trump,
temporarily.
He'll always come back, but we'll
move on a little bit.
In fact, someone wrote in a question noting that we don't have any conservatives on our panel this week. That is true. This might give you some reason to rejoice then if you're a Republican. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton and WikiLeaks. There's been, I mean, talk about a steady drip, drip, drip. We've been getting these batches of the Podesta emails. As well as just kind of it playing to the whole what's going on with, you know, has she been telling the truth about the servers and such? Is this a serious issue for her going into the last stretch of the
election? Well, I think it's going to be a serious issue for her. I think at this point, you know, the cake's kind of baked. But I think it's going to be a serious issue for her with people from the left going forward. Because a lot of the stuff in there is very inside baseball. The people in this room would probably enjoy it because you're political geeks like we are, but with all due respect. But a lot of it is, you know, how, you know, Donna Brazile has got a question. She's going to slip it to Hillary's campaign. Well, like, that's not cool if you're Bernie Sanders or you're someone running against Hillary, or if you're someone who doesn't share the same track as Hillary. So, I mean, I think she's going to have to mend some fences on the left as well as on, you know, it goes into the, she's going to have a tough road to govern when she starts.
Heading into the next term elections and so forth. It goes to the whole issue of, does she say one thing in public and another thing in private? All politicians do, like, you know, big surprise, but on issues like, you know, Dodd-Frank and other issues, bank regulation, was she cozying up to the, you know, Goldman Sachs people? All of these issues really, I think, are of concern to the left as much as to the far right. And just the WikiLeaks story in general has been fascinating. We haven't seen any WikiLeaks on the other side. On the Republican side. That's an interesting aspect.
Just an oversight.
Well, it will give, what's his name, Jason, Chaffetz, the Utah.
Chaffetz.
You know, more ammunition. And I think that the Clintons do seem to attract investigations, fairly or unfairly. Going back to Whitewater, and, you know, which amounted to nothing, but their penchant for secrecy and, you know, their lack of transparency and just sometimes the way she is, it fuels this suspicion, and I do think that we haven't probably heard the end of the WikiLeaks stuff at the end of the election. It's exhausting, I think. And if you think about, like, the last 7.5 years, it's really been quite an extraordinary scandal-free period of time. And it's easy to just kind of take that for granted, you know, either personal or, I mean, there have been this occasional Solyndra and the gun-running thing in Mexico with Eric Holder, but you know, by and large, we haven't seen the kind of big scandals that dominate coverage and, you know, lead to a second term being a failure for a lot of presidents.
Someone asked, excuse me, when will we talk about issues, not this Trump crap? So. It sounds like a Wednesday night might be this was something that happened today. John McCain said something and kind of walked it back right away. I don't know if you heard about this. He, talking, I think, to donors, I don't know if it was a public event or not, said basically under President Hillary Clinton, Senate Republicans would continue to prevent any of her Supreme Court nominees to get a vote. Later he said, no, of course not, we'd vote on it. Was he just trying to do some red meat, do you think, for his...
I think that sounded like red meat, because I think McCain's going to be the least of your problems on that issue. He is someone who's been... who's been
if he's there.
If he's there, I think a bit. But he's been a compromiser over the years on immigration and other things. So I don't think
it is going to be interesting. Excuse me. No. Just that whole idea of, like, you know, are they going to continue to be obstructionists, which is certainly a lot of the party wants, the base wants, but it hasn't really gotten them what they wanted, which was the White House. You know, yeah. I don't. But on the other hand, you got all these House members in safe districts, so they feel their biggest threat is to be primaried on the right. You know, so they're
And I think that's, you know, they're looking at this right now. What is the effect on all these down ballot races? We were talking at here, even here in California, you've got races like Daryl Issa, who has been a darling of the conservative movement nationwide. He's never lost an election with less than double digits, and now he is really facing a challenge and looks like he may lose to Doug Applegate.
And they say, and
there's like no conservatives in the audience.
Yeah, exactly. Who are you complaining about it?
That's it.
Well, this is actually good because, A, we wanted to talk about some state issues, the candidates, the campaigns, the propositions, and had some folks here had also asked the same thing. So let's segue into that. I mean, Issa possibly going to lose, probably.
Yes. Issa looks like he's in real danger.
Yeah. U.S. House of Representatives from Southern California.
I think if he loses, it's going to be a real wave election because meaning that all the undecideds, everything kind of breaks for the Democrats, and a lot of the close races go against the Republicans because he does have a registration advantage. He's running against a candidate who's, you know, he's not a great candidate. He's got his own issues, his own personal problems, although he is a Marine, which plays well down there. So I think he could lose. He absolutely could lose, and I think it just got shifted from, you know, leans to whatever. They downgraded it to less secure for the Republicans. So he definitely could lose, but I think if he does lose, it's going to be a really bad night.
The Democrats are kicking themselves, though, because they had a chance to probably pick up more seats, but their bench is, they weren't ready for a lot of these challenges. They're like, Daryl Issa is a safe seat, so they weren't grooming anyone to jump in there. That said, I think Pelosi thinks she can take the House with pick up 30 seats. I think that's a hard one.
But she's going to pick up some here in California. I think Steve Knight is another one down there in Southern California who looks to be in real trouble. And you have some Democrats who looked to be in trouble and are no longer in trouble. Ami Bera up in the Sacramento area. Now, the latest poll shows him 11 points ahead now.
Really? Which poll is that?
Ben Tulchin's poll today, from what I hear. And that was a real nail-biter for the Democrats.
Ironically, he lucked out. He had some outside help. His opponent had, like, a sexual harassment
issue against him. But the Trump thing, too, is weighing in there.
Ironically, I think one of the most endangered Democrats is Mike Honda, you know, who, but even if he loses, which seems increasingly possible, it's going to remain in Democratic hands. And I think that's another problem for the Daryl Issas of the world is you've got this statewide ballot with you know, Trump, you know, being problematic, and then you've got no Republican Senate candidate, so there are fewer reasons for Republicans to come out and vote, you know.
And it's interesting, in the Senate race between Kamala Harris and Laura Sanchez, the polls are showing 25% of the Republicans are just going to leave it blank.
Yeah,
And they volunteer that to the pollsters. They weren't even asked about it. I'm not voting for either one of them.
To the point where Sanchez was a super PAC or a PAC.
Yeah, super PAC supporting her.
Came out with an ad today comparing her to the liberal Barbara Boxer, which didn't go over well.
No. Comparing Harris
to the liberal Barbara Boxer, trying to get Republican votes. It's kind of interesting to watch, the top two primary in California has created these Democrat on Democrat races. That's what's going on in the Honda Kana race, where Honda just came out with a new ad, which purports to show Kana, you know, in the backseat of a limo, dialing Wall Street, you know, that kind of thing. I think you're going to be looking at California at these Democrat on Democrat races for a long time to come, particularly at the statewide level. And it's going to get ugly.
It is, because you've got, I mean, the Republicans are becoming less and less relevant. And so, you know, the Democrats are not very homogeneous. I mean, they have business Democrats, moderate Democrats. And, you know, the more that the Republicans are kind of pushed aside, the more these intra-party squabbles could become nasty and personal.
And that's the pitch that Loretta Sanchez is making, right? She's more of a moderate Southern California Democrat.
That's right.
Yeah, although, I mean, she's also an example of it getting nasty a little bit. Yeah. She's contributing to it, but just, you know, I'm not criticizing her that she's doing what she has to do to try to get votes.
Is there any chance that she would win this election, do you think?
Slim. Very slim.
I think most of the polls show, Kamala Harris in really good shape and in money way ahead, and she's gotten the endorsement of everybody.
Every Democrat. So I have to say, you know, I personally, just as a citizen, find it a little disappointing that there wasn't a more robust discussion and campaign around that Senate seat. It's so rare. It's been 25 years since there's been an open Senate seat in California. Alan Cranston, Barbara Boxer won that seat. And, you know, it would have been more interesting if, like, a Javier Becerra had gotten in from a congressman from Southern California, or Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, somebody who could really have brought, you know, elevated the debate. I mean, I think they were so relieved that Sanchez got in because she's, you know, she's a little unscripted.
Which is endearing. Was very confusing. It is endearing, but I don't know if, you know, for U.S. Senator. But she didn't seem to be trying that hard either. There wasn't a lot of campaigning outside of Orange County, and she's from Orange County. Yeah. So it's like, and they didn't have any money to get to do big ads or to do any other kind of broad statewide name recognition campaign. So most people still don't know who she is.
Yeah.
And it is sad, but I don't think, I didn't sense a lot of, and she's giving up her House seat. So why not go all out for it and just get in the car and drive around?
And Joe, as you pointed out today, you had a story on Kamala Harris being such a cautious candidate. She really is. She did not want to make any mistakes. She just played it safe the whole way.
Well, and also just, I think, in a way, hiding behind her title of Attorney General to avoid talking about all kinds of things from, you know, policing issues to things that were on the ballot, to things that might be on the ballot, you know, just say, well, I can't talk about that. I'm the Attorney General. And it just, you know, which is not what previous Attorneys General have done, you know. So it's just really super cautious.
Let's talk about some of the propositions. Marijuana legalization.
Well, I think this is really the one to watch. Gavin Newsom is the main proponent here, along with Sean Parker, a big billionaire from Silicon Valley. We're told that, you know, Sean Parker's real interest is social justice, but it's like a lot of these guys, let's face it, are betting on what's happening here. We hear about land being bought up in Northern California, big money interest coming in, and I'm wondering. I don't know where the polls are on this one. But I think there is this might be more of a fight than people think in California. The fact is, if California approves this, Gavin Newsom gave a press conference today, said this is going to be a game changer in the country. When you have the fifth largest economy making recreational pot legal, that's going to just throw the dominoes in every other state. You've got four other states voting the same night that we are on this. It'll effectively end prohibition, and the rest of the states will eventually fall in line. So what happens in California is a very big deal. I think what is the concern? There's tremendous concern still on, you know, does this put more people out on the road? You know, who are high? That's the question he got asked today. The issues of edibles with kids. You know, they say things like, "Well, we're not going to make them attractive to children. We're going to make sure." But as somebody said, what does that mean? You're going to broccoli? I mean, you know, right now they're cookies, they're brownies, the kids eat them. You know, there's danger there. So I think there are.
I think you're onto something.
By the end of the week, there'll be broccoli edibles.
Broccoli edibles. But I think, you know, on the other hand, hearing Newsom today making the case of the criminal justice issue, I think that's the strongest issue in this. Here, that as we know, this all the stats show it. African Americans, Latinos are more proportionately suffer the effects of arrests in these cases and lifelong effects.
Yeah, and I think there are a couple of things with the weed initiative. One, we're unleashing, you know, an underground economy that's what, 5 billion to 15 billion. We don't even know how big it is, onto the above ground, and we don't know what kind of chaos theory that's going to spawn. We don't know what that's going to do. So that's one thing that's going to be very interesting to watch for, and you know, it'll be a little bit of an earthquake. The other thing, the social justice thing, I think is a little, might be a little bit, let's not expect to wake up tomorrow and say, well, everything's fine. You know, black and Latino people aren't going to be pulled over for weed anymore. The early results from Colorado are, yeah, arrests went way down, but it's still black folks are arrested three times, pulled over as much, three times as often for weed-related crimes as white folks. So, and that's, you know, because it's still an excuse to pull somebody over.
Well, meanwhile, it'll still be a Schedule I narcotic, right, or drug. It's going to be, you know, so I don't know what Congress, are they just going to pretend that this discrepancy doesn't exist, or is Congress going to do something? And you know, well, there are a fair number of Republicans who are, you know, libertarian-leaning who think it should be legal.
Tom McClintock.
That's right, from the foothills.
Yeah. And isn't there an actual issue with how do you collect the tax on something where banks, because of federal laws in this, banks can't handle this money.
I think they're working that out.
Yeah, there's some credit unions you can kind of go in through the back door on.
Joel will tell you about them later after the program.
They're the San Francisco Credit Union.
Yes, San Francisco.
Happy to take the money.
It's a new revenue stream, I think they like to call it.
Easy terms.
The Chronicle. Yeah. Let's talk about another couple of propositions. There are two death penalty propositions. One seeks to speed it up, make it more efficient. Another says end it. Scott, you want to tell us what you think about those?
Well, I can't tell you what I think. But no, it's, you know, I think everyone agrees. The death penalty in California is dysfunctional. It's broken. You know, we have, since we reinstated the death penalty in 1978, the state has handed down more than 900 death penalties. We've executed 13 people. The leading cause of death on death row is old age and suicide. It's true, and natural causes generally. So it isn't working, and the question is, like, can it be fixed? I mean, there's some question as to whether we can even get our hands on the drugs that, you know, the lethal cocktail. You know, a lot of companies, because of protests on the left from death penalty opponents, have stopped allowing these drugs to be used. So, I mean, Jerry Brown is just running out the clock. I mean, the last thing he wants to do is preside over an execution in California. I mean, it's been over 10 years since a federal judge said, you got to come up with a different protocol. And we still don't have a protocol. You know, it's sort of in the phase of being talked about and public comment. So, you know, that said, I think that there are a lot of people that like the status quo. You know, they do think that there should be a death penalty for certain crimes, the most heinous, you know, Richard Allen Davis, you know, polyclasis killer. So I think there are a lot of people in California who are reluctant to take it away altogether. They don't want to speed it up. I'm certain Prop 66 will fail because it's confusing and just doesn't seem to do well in the polls. But I'm not sure. I mean, Prop 62, the one to ban that, it might squeak by, you know, if there's a big turnout of Democrats. But, yeah. You know, it's mixed. California is still kind of has a conservative streak to it.
What happens if they both pass?
If they both pass, whichever one gets the most votes would prevail. But I think it's more likely they'll both fail.
Now, Larry Gersten from San Jose State University and a frequent week-to-weeker has said that basically when you get a lot of propositions and ballot measures on or voter measures on the ballot, people tend to vote no.
That's right.
More and more. It's like...
Or don't vote.
Either that or, yeah, right, either leave it or
vote.
Fatigue, no. So are there any measures that you think in a less congested year might pass that you might think would be doomed this year? Just because of the fatigue, I'm not going to read ballot arguments from, you know, 63 different...
Well, you're right. We have 17 on the state ballot, and then what is it, 23
in San
Francisco? 24 in San Francisco. Yeah, I mean, this is like insane, right? People, and we know that the ones at the bottom of the ballot get get less attention. People stop. And just my sort of anecdotal talking to voters out there. I mean, a lot of people are just. No, I'm going to do no on, you know, everything. I'm just tired of this, right? This includes, you've got things like tobacco tax, soda taxes. You've got...
Extending the sales tax, or the income tax, rather.
That's right. Yeah. I think a really fascinating one is this one. I went out to Stockton to talk to Dean Cortopassi, who's the Italian tomato farmer out there, who spent $4 million to put this no blank checks, I think it's Prop 53. Which means if any kind of infrastructure plan or big plan that costs more than $2 billion has to go to the voters. And his whole thing was, look, the Bay Bridge, you know, who's paying for that? The average guy who used to pay $1 and now is paying $6 for a toll because these costs just keep skyrocketing. I think something like that could pass, actually, in this mood with the voters. Even though every editorial board has said no on it, but something like that, I think school bonds and other issues that maybe might pass in the past could be in danger this time.
Yeah, well, I think, you know,
even the extension of Jerry Brown's Prop 30 taxes.
Yeah, I think there is a fatigue about revenue. I mean, when you, even if you don't sit down to think you're going to vote against these things, you know, by the time you get to the fifth or sixth or seventh revenue-generating thing, you know, in San Francisco, there's the real estate transfer tax. I mean, you know, the conventional wisdom is that people tend to vote for raising other people's taxes. So, yeah, tax the rich, tax the smokers, tax the drinkers, you know. But, you know, even soda, you know, I think people might be willing to go for that this time in San Francisco. But, you know, I think after a while, people just think, why am I increasing all these taxes? You know, so at what point that is, I think it might be a little different with people voting by mail because they, you know, I think the fatigue factor might be less because, you know, you vote, you know, I'll vote on 10 things today and I'll vote on 10 things tomorrow.
Yeah, you know? I agree with you. Yeah.
Wow.
But that, this is a lot to ask for people.
It's ridiculous.
They're throwing things at us that the legislature themselves did not want to handle. Like, right? Am I right on this? I'm sorry. Should we be voting on, you know, do porn actors need to wear condoms? I mean, do we need to vote on that? But can't they figure that out in Sacramento?
Yeah, although I don't blame that on Sacramento. I blame that. I mean, there's this guy in L.A. who's really pushed that. But I think the local ballot in San Francisco, there are a lot of examples of things that they either didn't want to deal with or wanted to put it on the ballot to create a wedge issue, like the encampments, the tents on sidewalks, where there's really no particular need for that, but it's a nice little issue in the Senate race with Jane Kim and Scott Wiener kind of puts them on opposite sides of that. So it does. It's just, it's like, why aren't you, what are we paying you for? You know, you're there to legislate, you know?
I think the soda taxes are going to be interesting to watch just because the soda companies, which are extremely profitable, except for financial services, I understand, they're the most profitable entities out there. And they put a lot of money. I live in Oakland where we hear these ads about grocery tax. They have defined it as a grocery tax. And those ads are running almost nonstop.
Thanks to
Oakland.
Bernie Sanders.
And yeah, I mean, so that one will be interesting to watch. The tobacco taxes also, we just saw today, Philip Morris put in another $232,000 against that tobacco tax. They have put, I think, something like $5 million in the last week on this. They are throwing a ton of money at stopping that one in the sand. And the drug companies are throwing all kinds of money against Proposition 61, which is one that mandates that the state of California should be able to negotiate with the drug companies to get the lower prices as the VA, the same low price as the VA. And the drug companies also see that as a line in the sand. If they can't control prices here in California, they're afraid that movement is going to move to other states.
I'm wondering, there's so much, though, out there. The media overload is so much. What is sinking in? I mean, it's the TV commercials. We're not even getting presidential TV commercials for the most part. But I'm wondering where are they getting their information from? We're getting in Oakland tons of mailers on the soda tax, and it's just at some point people are just shut down. I think people who are, you know, casual voters, the low information voters. I think it might be overwhelming at some point.
Well, there are some things that people like Prop 64 that will draw people out, young people perhaps, to vote for it, just guessing. Yeah. But yeah, at some point it's like just too much, you know. And especially things like Prop 53, which I guess they have tried to make it a simple argument, like we should have a right to vote on these things. But like Prop 57, which is the governor's ballot measure to reform parole, you know, it's very complicated.
Yeah, that's even a shorter one. But that's something that's a nuanced argument, and that's something you really have to study in advance to learn.
Yeah, and I think that's an example
that's
of the kind
that
can
the
go
shuffle.
Down.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
And I think the other death penalty measure, the one to speed it up too, is super complicated, and I think people are going to just vote no on that.
And you have two on the plastic bags. Also,
which was right, and they put the plastic bag industry put those on the ballot to be confused, to confuse people. To hopefully they'll vote, want them to vote no on both of them, which would invalidate the law that the governor signed.
One last question before we move on. BART is seeking, so I believe, bond funding to do maintenance and such. Do you think they've?
I think this is an example of.
Because you on the stage have complained about BART.
I absolutely don't get me started on BART. Because, I mean, when you talk about the strikes that have gone on there, some of the issues, I mean, we've talked about this before. If you go to almost any place else in the world, you got a better train system, a more, you know, you can go to the most, you know, the third world countries, and they have fabulous, you know, much more modern train system than BART. Now they're trying to beef it up and so forth. But the fact is, people have taken huge increases in the fares. They've taken strikes every 4 years. There's been analysis. I think Dan Bornstein has done a tremendous job on this over in the East Bay of how this bond measure does not nearly cover a lot of the costs of BART or what the taxpayers are going to be stuck for in the future. So I think that may be one of the ones where voters kind of just go.
Although I think, you know, whether you drive to work or take BART to work, it seems like you'd want BART to work
better.
I think that's also going to be an interesting one to see where young voters come in, because there'll be more young voters on this cycle because it's a presidential cycle. And young people want public transportation.
This
is the Uber generation. I don't have a car, I don't have a license, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm curious to see that might be the thing that saves it.
What's the source of the revenue? Is it sales or is it property tax? What is it?
It's property tax.
It's a bond. Property.
How many of you took BART here tonight?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, exactly.
We all take it. Yeah.
Okay, well,
I don't know if the anger will overcome the need.
anger versus millennials,
I did want to take another topic, which was not to get back into Donald Trump, but to get back to a movement that has latched on to his candidacy. You've heard, I think, a lot of folks have heard it for the first time, the alt-right. So first, what is the alt-right? And second, what do you think it does after this election? Assuming Donald Trump doesn't win, you know, is this a growing movement? This is not a movement that's going to just go away, right? It's captured.
This is a movement that grew up. I mean, the alt right came out of alternative media sources like Breitbart, like InfoWars, a lot of groups out there that are not traditional or mainstream media. And we know where the trust factor is on a lot of our own work. So that's, I think there's been a growing number of people have turned to those. We've talked before about how people tend to now go to media sources that already confirm their political views. They don't want to hear the other side a lot of times. Without a leader or, you know, a charismatic kind of leader like Trump for them, I don't know if they continue to grow and prosper, or whether they, you know, they've been sort of under the radar. Breitbart has been for a long time.
Right. And they're
you interviewed him before he died.
Yeah. He gave me a ride once to a Tea Party rally in Nevada. Walking around the side of the road. Hey, there's Breitbart. Hey, can you give me a ride? Sure. So these folks largely live online. And that's, you know, that was even the challenge with let's go back to the liberal blogosphere after Kerry lost. How do you transfer this online energy, which is much more of a mainstream than this crew, energy onto the streets into making it, turn into some sort of political viability and to, you know, get people elected and such. So, I mean, where do they go? I mean, are they going to start voting for school board elections and assembly races, or are they just going to just throw bricks at people? Yeah, and just be angry online. But there is a poll. I mean, when was it the convention, then Alexis Jones's rally? I mean, only 200 people there showed up, but the people came, they drove from all over the place. But that kind of threw some water on it for me, like, okay, so this guy held this big event and like a couple hundred people showed up. There's like the media we're all interviewing the same four people.
I mean, how much capacity do people have for like anger? You know, I mean, doesn't it kind of burn itself out? Or I don't know. I mean, unless you're bringing new people into the movement, it just seems like exhausting.
Right. There's nothing really aspirational about it, which is how you grow a movement.
Well, it doesn't really. Does it accomplish, too? I mean.
Right. And they haven't figured that out yet, except their message is like Hillary sucks. And that's not going to take you further than November 8th until the next time.
Yeah, and the other problem is the demographics of the movement. It still is a white, male-dominated movement. And that's the problem with what Trump has right now. Women are just not are not attracted to his candidacy.
So you don't think his outreach to women over the past couple of weeks has worked?
It's the wrong kind of reach.
You gotta go back.
I'm thinking it's not quite. The magic isn't there. And you
gotta
know,
aim a little
millennials,
higher.
Latinos, and so forth. Unless you have, these are constituencies, especially when you're talking about Latinos. The numbers are huge, and this time around, I think they're going to break the bank. And the fact is, you don't attract new blood to your movement, and you're nowhere. And I'm not sure. We'll see.
That's a problem for the Republican Party generally.
Okay. Let's get through some audience questions here before we get to the news quiz. Michelle Obama has been out on the campaign trail, gave a very highly viewed speech this past week. Does she have a future in politics, do you think? Do you think she wants a future in politics?
That speech that she gave this last week was just out of the park. Unbelievable speech. We've seen a lot of speeches, but that one was just in the stratosphere. I have to say, I recently saw her. I was in New York and saw filming of the Colbert Report, and she was no, it's not the Colbert Report. It's the
Late Show.
The Late Show.
Trevor Noah. Yeah.
He's the Late Show now, and so I was in the audience, and she just has the magic that so few people have on the political scale, and she's really developed. I mean, I saw some of her original early speeches. She was not that great in the beginning, and she has just developed into an unreal orator, better than her husband almost. So does she have I think she absolutely has a future in politics if she wants it. I'm not sure she wants it. I think she can do anything she wants to do, and she is no question about it, the most valuable surrogate out there.
Absolutely.
For Hillary.
But I think also once you start to become a political candidate and figure, then you have responsibilities. But she's just dynamite. And I think she's almost better sort of outside the political system as a truth teller. And she has the rare ability to be a real person, which we know a lot of politicians, that's the rare quality.
Well, she's got such authenticity that resonates with all kinds of people. And I do think that part of I don't think she wants to have a career outside of what she's been doing for the last 8 years. I think that part of what's fueling her now is her husband's legacy. I mean, I think that she obviously feels very strongly about that. And I think if any of the Republicans had won, but Trump, it would be a lot of what he did would get undone. And I think that's really partly what's animating her so much. But obviously she feels these issues in her bones as well. I mean, her speech at the Democratic Convention was just extraordinary.
Someone in the audience notes the work that Bernie Sanders has been doing out on the stump, doing events for and with Hillary Clinton. How much credit do you think he will get, and what role do you think he has in a Hillary Clinton, maybe in the administration or maybe outside of it, but I mean, what is his role within the party and in the country?
He will be the senator from Vermont. Yeah, he's not going to be inside the House. And he's probably more valuable there. I mean, as someone who can sort of speak his mind, he's not going to.
He's an outside player.
He's an outside.
If the Senate flips, I read this today, but I can't remember what committee he's going to. The Senate flips, he becomes the chair of appropriations or some really powerful committee. I can't remember which one it is right now. Budget. That's
budget,
it. So that's no small.
That will
thing.
Be interesting. Yeah.
Watching him, handle that one will be fascinating.
I pulled the wrong card. So Billy Bush, I just read them, but I'm not right. Billy Bush was
fired. Really,
Billy Bush was the he was a TV host on
Access Hollywood.
Access Hollywood. He was
which we're missing right now, I think. I DVR'd it. That's okay.
I actually cannot read the writing. I am so sorry. Okay, John McCain. John McCain, given his comments, I wanted to get back to do you think he has a chance to lose his seat? I've heard that from one Republican analyst.
That would be, when you were talking about a wave, yeah. I mean, that would kind
it
of
would
be a harbinger.
It would take a real wave. I mean, somebody described, they were talking about Georgia, actually, but yeah. I would add maybe Arizona. They described it as the Charlie Brown football, you know, where they before they go to kick it, it gets pulled away. You know, it looked like they were going to be able to kick it. Was that Lucy that did
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think, sure, it could happen. I mean, I think there's an odd combination of things happening. First of all, he's been there a very long time. There's an increasing number of Latinos in Arizona. They've got a decent candidate running against him, a woman, Ann Kilpatrick. And he's also, like so many Republican candidates, they're in this bind, you know, where if they disavow Trump, then they really infuriate that part of the party.
Yeah.
But if they're for him, then he loses another demographic. So it's kind of a rock and a hard place for him.
Yeah.
But he could lose. Yeah, he could lose.
Okay. Sutter Brown, California's first dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Carla, I know you have
one thing we can all agree on.
The
governor's dog.
Yeah, the governor's dog is a little corgi, Pembroke corgi. Just a real celebrity in Sacramento. If you walk around with him, as we have, he attracts people from all over. He's just... he's very ill right now, and you know he's gotten more Twitter action than Jerry Brown has in the last 5 years.
He's more entertaining on Twitter than Jerry Brown.
it's really a cool story.
It's so interesting. I mean, Jerry Brown, he has many, many strengths, but I would say the human touch is not one of them. and those dogs, I mean, Sutter was his sister Kathleen's dog, and she moved, I think, to Chicago, and so they took the dog. And now they have two dogs, Calusa Lucy and Sutter. And it's just humanized him in such a way.
Really
it's really
nice.
Sweet to see. And, you know, he's a political animal. Sutter is. They've used him in campaigns, and they had cards with his picture on it on behalf of one of his issues. And it is one of the, I mean, I think we can all relate to our pets, you know, and it's a bipartisan thing. And I mean, I had to put a cat down a while ago and just a few months ago. And, you know, mm-hmm. It's something that we can all relate to. But it has really humanized him in a way that's it's very sweet. And, you know, I think we all feel for the pooch.
Our wishes go out to you, Sutter. We've talked a lot about political apocalypse tonight. Someone asked, do you think the Chicago Cubs will win the World Series? If they do, will that signal the end of the world? So, that's our audience.
I'm not going there.
Well, listen, let's do our news quiz. We'll ask you some questions. If you have not seen how we do this, let me quickly explain it. Fran, our prize person, is going to have a bag full of chocolates here. I'm going to read out a question. If you think you know the answer, raise your hand. Don't just shout it out. I'll call on you, and then you can shout it out. If you're right, then Fran will give you Ghirardelli chocolate. Okay, ready? The first question. It would help if I read the right page. There we go. What did former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani say that dead people do? Ma'am.
They vote Democrat.
They vote Democrat. That's what he said. Well, and they're very concerned about Social Security being cut out.
Yes.
Okay, next question. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, she appears in our news quizzes quite a bit. She was giving a press conference with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. I hope I pronounced that correctly. She gave him a dirty look when he said, what about his wife? Sir, your hand was up right away.
His wife should be in the kitchen.
Right. The Nigerian president said his wife should stay in the kitchen.
Oh.
In other words, stop criticizing his politics. Didn't go over so well with Frau Merkel. Who is expected to walk away with $10 million from NBC? Back there in the white, sir?
Billy Bush.
This has got to set a Commonwealth Club record for Billy Bush mentions in one night.
Okay. Now, what was it that, for what, did the head of this country's largest police organization apologize on Monday? Why did he apologize? What was he apologizing for? Ma'am.
Brutality.
That's right. Police mistreatment, particularly of minorities. The woman in white, right there. Next. What is being banned by an increasing number of airlines? Way in back, sir.
Oh, everybody knows.
Yes? That's right. The Galaxy Samsung Note 7. Very good. They explode. Apparently, that's not welcome on planes. I don't know. Seems a little judgy to me, but okay. The 15-year-old daughter of what U.S. Olympian was killed by gunfire this week? Sir in the blue.
Sprinter Tyson Gay.
That's right. Sprinter Tyson Gay. Okay. Who has been receiving death threats in Arizona after they did something? Ma'am. That's right. Staff of the Arizona Republic. It's a longtime Republican paper. They endorsed Hillary Clinton, and they're now getting death threats. Yeah, I need to end this on a good note. Don't worry. It'll get
Thanks
better.
For reading.
Here's one. Where is a European spaceship landing this week? Sir.
Mars,
that's right.
Trump Tower.
That's good news. Trump Tower. Ixnay on the tray. Now, if you support same-sex marriage, you will be forced out of your job at what major evangelical campus organization? Did anyone see this story? Sir. No. Unless they've changed their name. Anyone, sir? No. I didn't know there were that many evangelical campus organizations. Way in the back row, ma'am. No.
But always a good guess.
One more guess. Sorry?
Legion.
No. It's not. This is an organization that's across a lot of campuses. Sir. No. Okay, I'm just going to give it to you. You don't get chocolate for this, by the way. It's an organization called InterVarsity. Thousands of employees and... Okay, well, anyway... Speaking of same-sex marriage, thousands of people demonstrated against it in what world capital? Paris, that's correct. Okay, and...
The farmers.
Okay, one last question. Why is McDonald's famed clown, Ronald McDonald, not doing as many appearances anymore? Sir... Too many creepy clown stories in the country. That's right. Listen, we'll be back with more news quiz questions and, of course, much more to discuss on Monday, November 7th. That's the day before Election Day, or 3 weeks before Election Day if you're Donald Trump. Right here in San Francisco, and you can get our week-to-week news quiz every week on Huffington Post. Thanks to our great panel today, Carla Marinucci, Scott Schaefer, Joe Garofoli. Thanks to all of you and everyone listening and watching online. Have a great week.